Tragedy plus time equals comedy, and in the case of the Vietnam War, the time was about 40 years. That's when Tropic Thunder satirized Hollywood mythmaking, throwing shrapnel at our country's shame in the process, and became the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, I'm Sean. Here are two people congratulating this young man on his graduation. It's Camille Adams.
Plastics.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Robin Elaine.
Elaine. Hitchcock, the graduate, 73 2/3, just above the Lego Movie and just below Child's Play. Just what everyone says. Everyone says, you know, The Graduate is a better movie than The Lego Movie, but it's no Child's Play. And yet, for this room, I'm like, yeah, that sounds right.
I like Child's Play a lot. Good movie.
I had strong response from the boomer contingent on that episode.
Mm.
And by the episode, I mean me making references to The Graduate on Facebook and Twitter. I've got a lot of the boomers out of the woodwork.
Just being a lot of the, like, Captain America, I understood that reference gif.
Yeah, a lot of like, yes, I remember.
I was young once.
It's older than it feels, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's a 55-year-old movie.
Well, I mean,
56-year-old movie.
As you discussed last week, it just like the millennial angst that we experienced is very similar to boomer angst. So with that, it just...
I just have more technology.
That's right.
That was the last moment boomers were allowed to have their own feelings. They were allowed to be a little confused in the late 60s, and after that, they shut down. But enough about The Graduate. We're gathered here today to discuss Tropic Thunder. Camila, tell us why.
Let's see. Because this is one... I don't even remember what... I won a bingo.
Yeah, okay. You got your second solo bingo within a calendar year is how the rules work at present moment.
And mind you, it got chosen because it was picked randomly out of a hat. But it made it in the hat because it is by far like... The line of people who are offended by this film is long, and rightfully so.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, it cracks my shit up.
It's funny.
It's so funny. And, you know, and it could have gone so wrong so fast, and it did not, thanks to RDJ. And this is just like one of those, like one of my faves. Like, it does get a little sloggy towards the end for me, but, you know, and I enjoy it, and I felt we needed a laugh riot.
It's really funny. And yeah, for the first 2/3, it's kind of nonstop.
Yeah.
Like, it's funny in every minute. It's odd because I did not intend to, but had to walk away from it and come back 2 hours later with like 30 minutes left.
That won't go well.
And then I was like, this was a more fun movie before I stopped. So I'm glad to hear that that wasn't just me, you know, ruining the flow.
The plot gets in the way.
A little bit.
Yeah. So whenever they're plot heavy, and when it becomes more of straight action, well, you could make jokes.
Yeah.
Right? Like, just Ben Stiller mugging isn't a joke necessarily.
Yeah. There are a lot of like long blown up sequences, and it's like, man, we didn't need all that.
It was like we've got money to spend.
This is Danny McBride's whole character.
Yes.
We need to what's your history? When did you embrace this immediately?
So when it came out, I saw it in the theater, and I remember going in very hesitant because I was a big RDJ fan, and mm-hmm. I was like, oh,
please don't hurt me.
Right, exactly. are we going to be breaking up after at the end of this movie? Because like, shit could go. And I wanted to see it before everybody told me like what I should think.
Oh, that's a really smart move.
And so that's why I made sure to go see it in the theater. And, you know, also I was a theater rat, you know, a movie theater rat. And I remember coming in a little bit late. And so we came in, not too late, but just like in the middle of that fake trailer with him and Tobey Maguire.
The fake trailers, I mean, like, this movie starts at its peak.
Right.
Yeah. The fake trailers are brilliant, and that is the best one.
Right, yeah. But I remember being so fucking confused. I was like, what is this? Like, thinking it was a real trailer. Like, what is this movie that's happening? Satan's Alley? Like, what is this?
Because it's not unbelievable. Right. Like, if you saw that presented, it's like they're going a little over the top, right. But okay. It'll probably make sense right. When I get there.
I mean, the Fatties trailer, that just could have been a movie.
Yeah. It was. Eddie Murphy. The Cranks or something? I don't remember.
The Clumps.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
Only remember because I had the soundtrack.
Really good soundtrack. Yeah.
So yeah, I did see it in theater and was like breathed a sigh of relief when it was all said and done, and continued my long life love of RDJ. Yeah.
Well, I'm so happy for you.
Oh, thank you.
I saw this in the theater again. This was a time when I was just going to the theater. Like, it was right. When I was in law school, and it was like the one joy of my life. And Colin, I was like, Colin, did we see this together? He's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure we did. And of course, I looked it up. It came out before we met.
What year was this?
2008.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So, because I was trying to do the math, I was like, did Dan and I see this?
Right. No. But we just barely missed it. This was I think we met 2 weeks after this came out, but I'm sure I saw it when it first came out. And I remember really liking it. I remember thinking it was really funny. And even though, like, I was kind of actively offended by it, but yet in a way where I was like, all right.
Take me on this journey.
Right? Like, I will let you face the consequences for this, but I will not necessarily be part of them. Does that make sense?
Let's just cordon this off now and address it.
We're not cordoning it off.
Let's simultaneously get to it head on and also see if we can get through some of it. This, as Camila mentioned, everybody was mad at one point or another between Robert Downey Jr., the disability advocacy community had a lot of things to say about Simple Jack, a lot of which was wrapped around a tie-in website that they launched for the movie Simple Jack.
Oh, my goodness.
Which, out of context,
I was unaware.
Did not translate as well.
Listen, the movie is just full of the R slur.
Right. And there's like also
a whole like 7 minutes of just saying the R word over and over again.
So like it's not really like you had to scratch deep to get to that.
There was also objections to Les Grossman as a parody of the, you know, Jews Run Hollywood, this guy kind of thing.
Okay.
That's quietest of the three.
That seems like a bit much because it wasn't like he came out like a full Jew. Like he wasn't wearing
the character name is by far the most Jewish thing about that character.
Right.
And I read on IMDb trivia, it's actually just a bastardization of the French for fat hands.
Why
the big hands.
I don't get that joke.
It was all Tom Cruise. Well, we'll get to that part later. But for some reason, you know, we talked about Blazing Saddles. We talked about Silence of the Lambs. This comes up a lot. It just doesn't feel as, I don't know, it feels more successful here.
My theory is that it's because they are pointing it out, and it's just like, this is what's wrong. Like, just when Robert Downey Jr.'s character in itself is, and they talk about it in the movie, and then also like the way Brandon, I forget the actor's name, but the actual black guy.
Al Pacino.
Love that.
I forgot completely
that his name was Al Pacino, and I was like, oh my God.
And that, you know, he's forced to hide his homosexuality as, you know, and forced to like put on this bravado, this male thing, and then like with like the fat actor with, you know, and it's just like them saying like, Hollywood, this is what's wrong with you. This is what you're doing wrong. This is what you're fucking up. And it's just so layered.
Yeah. I think it's such a good representation of 2008 racism, where it's like his character, Kirk Lazarus, sees nothing wrong with this, right?
Right.
He's just like, I'm doing my art,
right.
Okay? And I don't hate black people, so there's nothing wrong with this.
That's what Richard Dreyfuss says now.
Oh, right. My God. Well, I saw that clip came up randomly in my timeline the other day. I'm like, are you fucking, what is this? What's happening? What's up, dick? What's going on?
I don't mean to make light of his condition, but he's been drunk continually for the last 30 years.
And has
missed a lot there in that time.
And that's why his kid's such a dick, too.
Probably. I guess I feel like it's always pointing out the absurdity and the wrongness of a lot of these behaviors, particularly in Hollywood, while never using, but we're satirizing it as an excuse to make jokes that are offensive.
Right.
Because that's what pushes it over the line, where a lot of movies you could be like, I get that you're good natured, but you're also...
You're fucking up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like the only case where they missed the mark is by using the R word as much as they did.
I agree. Because
like they did have, they had mm-hmm. It was something that could have been there.
The criticism, like the whole idea of Hollywood is comfortable with people playing people with cognitive disabilities, but only to a certain point.
Right.
That's a valid critique.
Yeah.
And I had never really heard it before.
I mean, it's all, just to be fair, it's not 100% true. And I just want to say, like, justice for Cliff Robertson, who won an Oscar for Charlie in 1969.
So well, that's a while ago.
But that's such an interesting idea. And it just gets really hard for me to care about it because it does feel very icky.
Yeah.
And so I am completely respectful of people who are like, I can't get past the blackface. I think it's icky. It makes me upset just to look at it. I'm like, that is all valid.
Right.
You know, people have different feelings and thoughts that can be valid.
Right. And I do have thoughts on the whole blackface thing.
Should we save that for a little bit?
Yeah. We might as well.
Okay. Well,
I will say the creepiest.
Stay tuned for that.
I find it deeply, deeply upsetting when he takes the wig off and his eye makeup is gone. And it's
and the contact.
It's just there's an uncanny valley situation there that I can't handle.
I almost hesitate to point it out, but it's because the makeup was really good.
Sure.
It's because the makeup, it was very convincing for the rest of the movie.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, have you not seen this? Do you forget, other than the things we're mentioning, what happens? Let me tell you, because I actually remembered to write it down this week.
Good job.
Yeah, here's a 60-second recap. Say when.
Go.
Vietnam hero Nick Nolte, who will eventually be revealed as a non-hero who didn't go to Vietnam, wrote a book about his non-experience that is being turned into a prestige war movie. Ben Stiller wants to use it to gain credibility as a serious actor, Jack Black wants to use it to shake off the stink of his fart movies, and Robert Downey Jr. wants a sixth Oscar, this time by going full blackface. Director Steve Coogan is in over his head, and studio exec Screamin' Tommy Cruise threatens to fire and or fuck everyone unless Coogan gets the movie on track. Nolte drunkenly suggests that the cast be dropped off in the real jungle and filmed with hidden cameras for authenticity. When Coogan goes for it, he immediately steps on a landmine and blows up real good. Everyone but Stiller figures out that they're no longer in a movie. Stiller gets kidnapped by drug runners and forced to perform a crude yet heartfelt stage version of his failed Oscar bait. Eventually, they do the fake raid from the fake book, but for real, and save just about everyone, blow things up, and win Oscars.
Nice.
Well done.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I got through that whole movie the first time through and did not know it was Tom Cruise until the end credits.
I mean,
it was like, there's something familiar about this actor. I don't.
He looks really different.
Right.
Is this closer or farther away from the actual Tom Cruise, do you think?
Because I feel like
it's closer. I'm not one of those people who thinks he's got to be an absolute monster, you know, like this was going around last week where like there's that rumor that no one is allowed to look him in the eye. And I mean, that was debunked by Simon Pegg going, he's a nice man. I'm your trusted friend, Simon Pegg. And Tom Cruise is a real human being. I don't think he's that, but I do think he would yell at you like this.
Yeah,
if you screwed up his
cappuccino,
Scientology approved caffeine substitute.
You know, I get that's right.
Scientologists don't drink caffeine.
No, they don't.
And they work in Hollywood.
I gotta say though, like if I had the amount of fame and clout and money as Tom Cruise, I can't promise that I'm gonna be a quiet kitten.
Nor should you be.
Tropic Thunder was released August 13th, 2008, the 27th number one movie of that year, winning its opening weekend with $25.8 million, dethroning four-week champion The Dark Knight. This is what ended the run for The Dark Knight, which fell to second, $16.3 million. This was the first time in 7 years that two different movies won at least 3 weeks in a row. Because we talk about how many number one movies there are from the 2000s, because there were so many movies coming out and there was a new number one every single week. It had been since The Fellowship of the Ring and Black Hawk Down that any two movies each took three or more weekends. There were two other wide releases competing: Star Wars The Clone Wars, the forgotten Star Wars movie.
I absolutely had no idea that had a theatrical release.
Oh yeah. Third place debut, $14.6 million. And Mirrors is a horror movie with Kiefer Sutherland, I want to say. Mirrors, yeah.
Does not ring a bell.
If Camila doesn't know it and you don't know it, it doesn't exist. Yeah.
It is fake.
Amy Smart? We'll figure it out later.
Fake news.
Fourth place, $11.1 million. It held on for two more weeks. Like I said, wow. A three-week winner. It fended off The House Bunny, but that which was close by less than $2 million. And Death Race, they remade Death Race, but it was after 2000, so it wasn't Death Race 2000 sure. anymore. It was just, it was just Death that. Race. Those both came out in the second week. Babylon AD, Traitor, and Disaster Movie all came out in week three. None of them competed. Finally fell to second place behind Bangkok Dangerous in week four.
Bangkok Dangerous is on our list?
It is.
Okay.
One day. by the way, this was during the Beijing Olympics. Allegedly, the Olympics hurt the box office. Like, enough that okay. if you look at Box Office Mojo, huh. it flags Olympic weeks.
Oh, wow.
Like, in the same place that it flags the COVID pandemic. Like, oh, wow.
I guess there's that sect of people that are just
people stay home.
Stay home for the Olympics.
Yeah, all right.
Not me.
I mean, I'll watch them if I am home, but I'm not going to.
Yeah.
I'm not going to cancel plans. Throwing a javelin. Five total weeks in the top 10. Total of $110.5 million. 23rd overall for 2008. 2008 was a very, very profitable year. Expensive Baubles.
Expensive Baubles.
Robert Downey Jr. was nominated
for real
for Best Supporting Actor.
That's what? It. That's what I talked about last week. That Cuba gave him a very awkward introduction. Right.
Which yes. I forgot to watch that clip. I'll see if it's relevant or interesting and see if I want to cut it in.
Now let's talk about taking risks, shall we? Robert Downey Jr., this year with Iron Man and this nominated stroke of genius in Tropic Thunder, you've put yourself back among the boldest and best actors working today to be a white actor, playing a white Australian actor, playing a black man in blackface. I say it. Are you out of your mind? I mean, you know, I can understand getting into your character for the art of the character and soul, but that's enough from taking the parts from the black people, man. The brothers need to work. You know, that's enough of that. I appreciate it. Yes, congratulations on your nomination and your upcoming production on principal photography of your new film, Shaft.
But... Yeah. Here's the thing. Robert Downey Jr. was going to be nominated for an Oscar that year. The question was, in which category?
What else was...
Iron Man.
Okay.
Like, he would have been nominated for Best Actor for Iron Man if this weren't also there.
Oh, so this was like, oh, good, we can give him this and don't have to...
I can't remember who all was in the race in lead that year. I mean, it was like, that was, what's his face? Mickey Rourke? In the Wrestler?
That was the Mickey Rourke
year. Yeah, and Sean Penn, and I can't remember who else, but or Frank Langella, but like, and Richard Jenkins for The Visitor, like, that would have gone by, because everybody was so happy that Robert Downey Jr. was doing well, right? Right?
And that was like the big thing.
And Iron Man was huge, deservedly so. So, right. Like, listen, he was getting it in one category or another.
Sean Penn won in an upset over Mickey Rourke. Sean Penn for Milk, Mickey Rourke for The Wrestler. Nominated alongside Richard Jenkins in The Visitor, Frank Langella in Frost Nixon, and Brad Pitt in The Curious Case.
Yeah, Brad Pitt was the one I was missing. Listen.
Yeah. instead, Robert Downey Jr. got nominated for Tropic Thunder as in Best Supporting Actor.
A race that was never a race because of Heath Ledger's tragic death.
Losing to Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight alongside Josh Brolin in Milk, Philip Seymour Hoffman in Doubt, and Michael Shannon in Revolutionary Road.
Which was a surprise nomination.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Heath Ledger would have even been nominated if he had lived?
Yes.
Okay. So do I. A lot of people don't.
I don't think he would have won.
Neither do I. Yeah, I don't know who would have won instead, but...
He would have been nominated because that performance was fucking immaculate.
Right?
What trivia do we have now? That the Joker and Queen Elizabeth are the only characters who have given rise to two Oscar winners?
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think he would have. Well, we'll have a Dark Knight episode eventually. Still, Robert Downey Jr., honored to be nominated, especially for comedy, especially for a big R-rated comedy.
Right.
Him and Melissa McCarthy, that's about it in recent memory.
Wow.
And he was nominated everywhere, Golden Globes, Critics' Choice, SAG, BAFTA.
He's very, very funny in this movie. He gets it.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Tom Cruise, also nominated by the Golden Globes.
The part where he gets mad about Australian jokes.
And in the trailers, the Satan's out, and Tobey Maguire too, which, by the way, Tobey Maguire was on set for about 2 hours.
Good for him.
he was catching a plane to film something else, and they were like, he'll drop by if you can, and they were like, we're on it, here we go. Throw a robe on him.
That's great.
About the only thing this actually won is the Critics' Choice Award for Best Comedy. I was not voting yet, but I'll take pride in it anyway. Yes, Critic Choice Award winner for Best Comedy over Burn After Reading, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, Role Models, and Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
Hmm.
Random facts, plenty of good trivia. Originally, this was Ben Stiller's idea was to have Keanu Reeves as Tug Speedman.
Okay.
Oh, that would have been beautiful.
Yeah.
And that instead he would play Rick Peck, the McConaughey part.
Yeah.
That would have been cool.
I like McConaughey.
McConaughey's good.
And he was kind of fourth. That didn't work out. So then Ben Stiller moved over and they wanted Tom Cruise to play
McConaughey.
Yeah. Tom Cruise wasn't interested. He wanted to be and expand the Les Grossman role from the beginning.
Oh, wow.
So then Ben Stiller gave it to Owen Wilson, who unfortunately was at the nadir of his mental health at the time.
Oh, shame.
And backed away, and finally it ended up with McConaughey.
Okay.
I think Owen could have pulled it off.
Yeah. But
I do really like McConaughey in it.
Me too.
Just like his reactionary faces when Les is on the phone.
Yeah, and they show like both kinds of Hollywood suit jackasses.
Yeah,
I really the shiny happy Hollywood jackass.
He's your best friend,
right?
Yeah.
The screaming abusive Hollywood jackass.
I just love his office, like the movie theater standee where Simple Jack is moving back and forth in the corner, and a billboard for the sixth action movie behind him. It's so, all the details. Speaking of Tom Cruise, he developed nearly everything about the character himself.
Apparently, including the name.
Including the name, the big hands, the yelling, the dancing.
The Diet Coke.
This is all
what. I laughed so hard when he shouted, Diet Coke! I was like, oh, I feel that way all the time.
You're seen. I mean, who has redeemed themselves more in all of our eyes than Tom Cruise? Because I feel like 10 years ago we were like, this fucking guy.
Sean, why are we putting ourselves on mic saying Tom Cruise is okay? We are going to be eating these words.
I know. I'm sure I reserve the right to wave this off when he, I don't know.
Listen, I am like, Tom Cruise is okay. No, as I choke on those words.
Yeah. Exactly, right?
Your body rejects the concept.
Les Grossman, Lestat, and Ethan Hunt are okay.
I think Tom Cruise is a great movie star. I reserve the right to think
Maverick.
He's a
Let's not overlook
dude.
Maverick. Yes. Oh, no, he's a garbage dude. But Spielberg's right. He kind of saved movie theaters.
Oh, for sure.
That absolutely gives him some credit.
And he really is working hard to continue to do so, which I appreciate.
Like, you're right. He is a great movie star.
Yes.
Like, that is what he does. That is, he is taking this job like 110%. Like, this dude knows what the fuck he's doing. Like, I don't know. Like, he's been in Hollywood since, like, what, The Outsiders?
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, he's damn near immediately, like, catapulted to superstardom. Mm-hmm. And so, like, he knows how to fucking work it. Like,
yes.
He knows what he's doing. I can't fault him at that, but like, he's more than likely a garbage person.
Yeah.
Should he have won for Magnolia? Who did he lose to?
He lost to Michael Caine, who was getting his second Oscar.
Yes.
Yes. He should have won
for Magnolia. Let's play. Who were you spoofing? Robert Downey Jr. based the character on Russell Crowe, Daniel Day-Lewis, and mm-hmm. Colin Farrell.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, what now?
Kirk Lazarus is based on a blend.
Oh, Kirk Lazarus.
Right.
Okay. Russell Crowe, Daniel Day-Lewis.
Kirk Lazarus in character.
Okay.
No, right. No.
Yes.
Because I'm still trying to find the information on who he was imitating, because that's the difference
mm-hmm.
in this blackface. This is what I found to be different. about anybody else doing that. For one, it's the light is shown directly upon it. He is a white dude who decided to do this in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's not Robert Downey Jr. per se, like playing a black dude. He's playing a white dude who's playing a black dude.
He's a dude.
He's the dude who's playing a dude disguised as another dude.
I enjoyed your lip sync to that so much, by the way, Camila.
Thank you. And also, I kind of feel like he's not doing an imitation of a hosh-posh of stereotypes that he believes. I feel like there is one particular person in his life, maybe two, that he is imitating. There's some dude.
It feels like a real dude.
Right. There is some dude somewhere that is like, hey, that's me.
And I think going back to what Sean said about like the makeup is good. Like he just looks like a person. And like so much of like the history of blackface is about like distorted features to the point of cartoonishness, which is not to say that it is okay because he looks like a person, but I do think it makes it less,
a little more palatable.
Yes. And then also, like, I kept thinking about, and Colin and I were talking about, like, you know, this is not the only blackface from the time, right? Like, look, Fred Armisen was in blackface every goddamn weekend on TV, right? And, like, there was the episode of 30 Rock with blackface. There's episodes of It's Always Sunny with blackface. And in those two instances, they were like, look how ridiculously racist these people are. And in a way that let them be race, like just like the classic aughts ironic racism in very aggressive air quotes, where they're like, let's have fun with this.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas this felt much more, let's have a meaningful exploration of a particular aspect of Hollywood that is toxic.
Right. And we even have Al Pacino who points it out to him and has this discourse with him throughout the movie about it. And then there's like, and I tried so hard to find out like, who is he? Like, somebody like, please confirm, Robert, that this is some person that you like some dude you went to high school with or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, even like in the commentary, like they started to get like, Ben Stiller asks him like, who is this based upon? And he starts to tell him and then Stiller interrupts him to talk about an explosion. I'm just like,
I did. So in the commentary, does he do the commentary in
he
character?
Does it in the, what is the sergeant's name? Because when you said that, when you tweeted that, when you sent that, I was like, oh my God, that's awesome. Like, wait a minute. Is he the army dude or is he Kirk Lazarus?
I thought he would be Kirk Lazarus. No, and then there's that line in the movie where he says, I don't drop character until I've done the DVD commentary. I was like, oh, I love this. They must have been joking about, you know what would be really funny in the DVD commentary? Right. And then they were like, let's write a line about it. That's what I'm guessing happened, at least.
Yeah. And the way, and even like the
so
way.
So you got teased.
Yes. Yes. I'm like, yes, yes. No. Okay. And like everything I found, you know, was just like him discussing it from like a million years ago was that he just said like, you know, he asked a lot of his black friends, is this going to be okay?
I love that apparently Ben Stiller did a screening with representatives for the NAACP who were ultimately, you know, kind of gave the blessing, but talk about a nervous 2 hours just looking over at them like, are they laughing?
And Robert was like, yeah, you know, most of them said, yes, this is cool. We know where your heart is. You know where your heart is and like what's going on. He said there were some of them that were like, and his mom was like, I don't know, Bobby, this seems like a bad idea.
I mean, it's like it kind of is a bad idea.
Right.
Yeah.
But alas, it worked.
So Kirk Lazarus, based on that trio of men, and Colin Farrell seems mostly the voice. It's
I actually, when I was watching it, I was mostly thinking about Russell Crowe just because of the fighting around the world aspects.
Yeah. Jack Black says it's loosely based on Chris Farley.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, I mean, that's a shame, but I mean, not a bet. He apparently he almost didn't take the part because he didn't want to go blonde. And when he agreed and dyed his hair, he was pissed about it for days.
What? I like the short blonde for him.
Jack.
Yeah.
I think it works for him.
And finally, Stiller says young Stallone. He was aping a young Sylvester Stallone.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, sure.
The scene where Robert is just like, oh, you trying to be, I'm trying to be more like you. You more cut than a Julianne salad. Give me that.
The bit with the exploding soda can because he's pretending to. I laughed so hard I gave myself a headache. Just fell over.
He feels so clever in that moment.
And when it sprays everywhere, you see Robert in the back just like, what? Like reacting to it like, what the fuck is that?
Is this what happens to you in the jungle?
Plenty of trivia. The only one I will point out is the original script. You know that bit where Jack Black pitches the catapulting from his Skinamax movie? That was just the original ending. They had no idea what to do in the third act.
And
had this catapult idea. And then eventually someone said, that's a terrible idea. Write in the script that that's a terrible idea. And let's come up with something else. It's just I mean, I appreciate the satire. None of us are inside Hollywood, but we're all adjacent enough to that world to like get a little bit more out of this. Mm-hmm. Right. But it's really just a really good comedy. And the late 2000s were a time where there were a lot of bad comedies coming out. And more than that, a lot of mediocre comedies, like every Will Ferrell movie other than Anchorman and Talladega Nights. It's just like a lot of formulaic, you know, the six, what they called the frat pack for a minute.
Oh, yeah.
Those six guys being sort of funny, you know, in a movie you can get through, but nothing else. Just to have a big hit movie that was this funny. Great.
Yeah.
Even like a Jack Black, like his withdrawals, like the whole, like him trying to eat the bat, like that, that sent me.
I was upset. I was eating while that happened and I was like, ah! But when he has to get tied up and then immediately.
Right. Like I,
but I mean, again, that's another thing where I'm like this depiction of addiction is not very copacetic. Like there's a lot to go at this movie, and I really do not begrudge anyone who finds this movie too toxic to enjoy.
Exactly. You know what? Like, yes, we all have our thresholds.
So yes,
sure. This is, you know, we talked about this with Guardians 3, with me and other people I know just felt too bad for those poor little animals.
That's hate Guardians 3 so much.
I hate Guardians 3 so much. This is about episode 6 in a row. I know. But... you know, that's not going to bother a lot of people.
Sure.
Everyone has the things that are going to bother them, and that's fine. I do think this is an example of walking the line very well.
Here's something that bothered me. Is there a human woman in this film?
This week's Letterboxd list, movies where there are no women. That is the Letterboxd list.
Yvette Nicole Brown is in there.
She looks, looks across the room.
She doesn't say anything.
When? Which? Oh, yes.
Matthew's assistant. It's like, Vivica, get off the line.
Oh my gosh, I definitely didn't recognize her.
What's her name has a line in one of the trailers.
Oh, Taylor.
Christine Taylor has a line with Simple Jack.
Oh, yeah.
And we've been on that Letterboxd list before with Black Hawk Down and Papillon. But no, definitely. Definitely. There might not be a woman in the credits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. Listen, it's like 10th on the list.
Right. Right.
It's just there.
It's like ladies get in line, honestly.
Let's talk about the trailer so we don't forget like we did last week. And then I spent 15 minutes trying to find where to edit back in the trailer conversation.
So the trailer.
Something happening here.
I'm coming, man. Don't you die on me, Foley.
I'm sorry. Can we cut?
What is going on here?
I'm about to jump out this helicopter like Wesley Snipes.
I'm doing the scene right now.
What
I'm
scene?
In
the
it.
Scene is about emotionality. Where is it?
God, I am dealing with a bunch of prima donnas.
The action guy who left the fridge open. The award winner.
Critically acclaimed Australian actor Kirk Lazarus underwent a controversial procedure in order to play the platoon's African-American sergeant.
I know who I am! I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude.
The comedian.
You think you can do what I do? Take a picture of this.
This summer.
You want to make this movie, right?
We take those boys up there, put them in the trees.
Shoot the whole thing gorilla style.
Real fear in the right.
Minimus.
Yes!
The movie they think they're making.
Exterior. Rainforest. Dusk. Cut to a frightening jungle.
Isn't a movie anymore.
I'm not a matrix.
So what?
This feels pretty real!
Exactly.
Let's use it!
Taking speed, man.
Some of us might not make it back.
What do you mean? Like, not on the same flight?
I don't believe you people.
What do you mean, you people?
What do you mean, you people?
Huh? Tropic Thunder.
To go a lot of trying just to get a bed here. Now we up in a big league.
That's the theme song for the Jeffersons.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
You out of your mind?
What?
You really need help.
Man, just because the theme song don't make it not true.
I think this trailer makes this movie look much worse than it actually is.
Mm.
I always watch the trailer like right after I watch the movie. Yeah. So, and I just was like, well, this makes it seem much more like boom, boom action nonsense.
I think it does.
Yeah.
I agree with you on that. But I also kind of think I kind of like the misdirection.
Okay.
Because I feel like Ben Stiller, Jack Black at that time, and Robert Downey Jr. were enough to get people curious and in the seats. And then, you know, you come in and it's like, you find out this is like a whole fucking satire, like a hilarious satire. And like, not thinking that, not that the trailer alludes to the straight up action, but you're right. It does.
I mean, you have to know it's a comedy.
Right.
A little from the cast. And then also because of Robert Downey Jr. being in blackface.
Right. Yeah, right? Exactly.
Like, it would be very different in the trailer if they were trying to sell that
exactly
as non-comedic.
It's a lot more boycotting.
Yeah.
Just going on the trailer alone.
Right.
But my only gripe with the trailer is that they do like the action star, the comedian, the award-winning actor, but they don't do the rapper.
Yeah, and also he's like ninth in the credits.
I made a note of that. His billing is after Danny McBride.
Which,
like,
that's
way down.
That's bullshit. And like, I know that actor doesn't have a ton of other credits, but like still, it doesn't matter. He's an important character.
Right,
he's
exactly.
like part of the core group.
Most of the rest of my notes are just things that happened that I liked. I wish Steve Coogan had just kept slapping Jack Black for 5 minutes.
I was
like, what, dude? What? Ah.
I had remembered Steve Coogan as being in more of the movie. Mm-hmm. I just think he is so funny.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Hamlet 2?
Yeah.
I love Hamlet 2. And so I was a little disappointed how quickly he is dispatched, even though I do think that is a very funny movie death.
Yeah. Everybody's gay once in a while. That's a great. And notice in all of the people we've talked about being offended, Glad isn't on the list because I think this was that was pretty good. Like that.
I mean, I just feel sorry for the dude.
And then
in the end, he gets to live his truth with Lance, and it is that Lance, which is funny to me.
And when that comes out, the reaction isn't like ew. It's like, really, you with the with the booty sweat, you are
right. And that's what the surprise is.
Also, when he just takes booty sweat out and he's like, "It's time for another refreshing booty sweat," like he's getting paid by the second.
Let's rate it, Camila. You brought us here. What do you say?
83.
Yeah, I was gonna say 80.
I'm lower, but with love, I'm giving it 69.
Oh, wow.
That is a 77 and a third. How does that compare to The Graduate? Significantly better than The Graduate.
All right.
We haven't cracked 80 in a while. We've gotten a little stingy. I think Mary Poppins snuck over 80. But
really?
That was it. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And wiser
we
in
had,
our
listen,
age.
We had a really strong run that I think reset the clock a little bit.
Right.
It's like you've had enough fun.
Here's Papillon. Yeah.
I like Papillon.
We'll see what happens next week.
Despite the total absence of human women. So meanwhile, the bingo card.
The bingo card. All I
forgot
got
mine.
All I got is released in the summer.
Okay.
Lit candles in any of those scenes where he's in the camp? Is he in the room full of candles?
It's got to be in the fake trailer.
Yeah, and also they've got rosary beads in the fake trailer. Does that count as prayer or praying?
Yeah, they were definitely praying.
Okay.
Damn it, I don't have my card, and there's stuff on here.
Well, I'm one away in two directions.
Me too, but okay. It's the same square. So if my big movie pet peeve of the driver not looking at the road, if we get that, I got a double bingo.
Ooh, that's exciting.
Clothes shopping and a kid throwing a tantrum. So here's hoping. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth, everybody. What did you see, Robin?
Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part 1.
I was there.
You were there one of the times I saw it. I saw it twice.
Wow.
Damn, girl.
I loved it. I really, like, there's really just, there's one plot point that, you know, grinds my gears a bit.
Yeah.
So yeah. Other than that, I'm like, oh, this was so much fun. A train falls off a bridge. Oh my gosh. You know, like, I had a great time.
Nice.
I feel like I've used this line before, and fortunately no one's paying enough attention to notice. You know, it's not the best movie. It's not the smartest movie. It's the most movie.
Yeah.
It's the moviest movie there is. That's great. I mean, I wish it was a little shorter.
It makes the Indiana Jones movie seem snoozy.
Yeah. You know? I wish it was a little shorter. It
feels fast, though.
It doesn't feel as long as it is. I still don't really care about or distinguish between many of the characters, but it's really fun. And I fell asleep during the last one. And I'm not really committed to this franchise. I had a great time. I've thought about going again.
Yeah.
Just because the action stuff is so good.
Yeah.
I don't know why he keeps trying to end his own life by stuff. I love practical effects and practical stunts more than anybody else. You don't need to drive a motorcycle off a mountain to get a shot of driving a motorcycle. Just drive it off a rock in front of a blue wall and fall into a vat of pudding. Right. That's the part of CGI that works. Right. Putting a different thing behind where you are. Totally effective. It's like, no, I really had to. You didn't. I'll give you the climbing up the tall building.
I'm going to say the climbing up the tall building in Ghost Protocol remains my favorite Mission Impossible movie. That felt different. Like, that felt like they couldn't have done this if they didn't do this.
Yeah.
So... Or I wouldn't be enjoying this scene as much if I didn't know that they did this.
Right.
Him driving a motorcycle off a mountain, I don't give a fuck.
I'm glad you had fun. And I saw something like, it's like he practiced that 500 times.
Good,
like, that's too many.
It's too many times.
Don't you have other shit to do?
Right. Every time it's like pulling a trigger on a potentially loaded gun.
Yeah. What else did you watch?
Well, I watched a bunch of silent movies. I guess a bunch of new public domain silent movies hit Tubi, including the first Best Picture winner, Wings, and the alternate kind of Best Picture winner from the first Oscars, because they had two categories and they had retroactively decided which one counted as the real Best Picture winner, Sunrise, and also Seventh Heaven, which is the other movie Janet Gaynor won Best Actress for. Guess what? Silent movies are fun to watch.
We've been doing a lot of them, too. Yeah.
I think that one of the things that I've been enjoying so much about watching silent movies is it keeps you off your phone more because you have to watch it.
Yeah.
but with less mental taxation than watching a movie with subtitles, right? Because it's
because there's a break. There's like the cards.
They only do some of the dialogue.
Right, yeah.
And then that's also kind of fun for me as an improviser to be I wonder what the long version of that conversation was. So
do you add your own funky soundtrack to it? Like, well, do you play Nine Inch Nails up against Sunrise?
On Tubi, they have a 10-minute loop of music attached to Wings that I have no idea if that's what really is the music that's supposed to be playing with Wings. Mm. And it does get... Wings is surprisingly long. It's like over 2 hours. And it gets... I'm kind of like, I'm tired of hearing this song. and Sunrise has a bunch of recognizable music in it. Like at one point, the Funeral March of a Marionette, the Alfred Hitchcock Presents tune is played. And that was very like,
it took me out of it for
a second. Yeah. Sunrise really insists upon itself. Anyway, if you happen to like silent movies, head on over to Tubi. They've got some new good stuff.
There was a ton on there. And if you're in the Pittsburgh area, head to PittsburghSilentFilmSociety.org. These who do stuff around the calendar, but the Silent Film Festival is coming, including Alfred Hitchcock's The Lodger at the Parkway Theater, Cabinet of Dr. Caligari with live music accompaniment at the Lindsay Theater. A bunch of these have live musical accompaniment. Wings will be at Row House Cinema on Saturday, September 30th. They've got a ton of good stuff. And we're enjoying the silence lately, too.
Yeah. Wings is fun, by the way. The airplane stunts are still cool.
Yeah. Effects last.
Yes.
Even 96 years. Camila?
I don't remember. Did I talk about the reading with Monique?
No.
Last week? Okay, so I watched that. I got assigned to write about that for Looper. It's a BET movie.
Mm-hmm.
And stars Monique. A woman is She is the only survivor of a deadly home invasion that kills like her two kids and husband. God. Yeah. But, you know, that's hold on. Okay. Wait for it.
Oh, no.
She writes a book about it and, you know, and she goes on. And then plot B is there's a young girl named Skye. She's a college student who has the gift of sight. And she's a medium. She's a psychic medium. And so she and her little friends do this. She does for real have this gift, but they do kind of use it to like squander some more money out of people. And so Monique, not believing in this for real, but her PR team is like, we need to get some stuff going on for your book. Let's bring in a medium and we do this. Like, okay, let's stage this, do this.
Oh God.
So this medium comes in to talk to her dead family. And then plot twist, shit gets real. And so if you have BET streaming,
is it watch good? It.
Here's the thing. Monique is the only recognizable star actor on this. It's the writer, director, producer as first time feature film.
Okay.
The script is great. The acting, I feel like, gets a little wonky. And then towards the end, like everybody starts like bringing it up a notch and it's unnecessary. And so like, but the script is amazing. So if you like, just if you have BET, watch it. It's worth it.
She's very nice. She's the only person with an acting Oscar I have talked to.
Really?
And she is very nice.
That's amazing. I'm glad. I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah.
Because she does have this like, oh, baby kind of vibe to her that I hope is real. Yes. That is like a genuine thing. Yes.
It would be tragic if that were not, yes, if that weren't sincere.
So
that, I mean, the other thing I've been watching is I started to use the Nomia principle and randomly generate a number and watch that episode of Law and Order SVU. And when you're like, and then I'm like, oh, this sounds like an SVU. Because I've only ever watched SVU or Law and Order of any flavor when I'm in a hotel room. But it's fun to watch.
It sure is.
And boy, did I forget how much it's like the first 10 minutes plot has nothing to do with whatever the actual
usually,
plot is.
It's like you get, I saw Insidious, The Red Door, and Sean, I hear you have feelings. I think we're going to have a little battle.
Yeah. This one didn't do it. And I don't know if that's just the concept doesn't work for me anymore. And it did, you know, 5+ years ago. And I don't know if I saw the prequels. I probably did.
Yeah, you don't really need to see 3 and 4. To get this one.
I just checked out. It could have been mood. It could have been how I was feeling that day. This was in the middle of the afternoon before I saw Mission Impossible. Usually the thing I see in the afternoon on a double feature day, I don't love as much. Hopefully that does not carry over to Barbie on Thursday. I felt like this one started with a concept and then just ended up, oh, we got to go into the further and wander around and then we'll walk out and everything will be okay. Like I just thought it fell apart for me. But you are a big supporter of the franchise.
I am. And so I don't know if that may color my opinion and also a big supporter of Patrick Wilson.
And, I definitely was confused because Patrick Wilson is in two of these franchises.
Yeah.
That I fully thought that they maybe were all one thing.
No, I mean, no, it's not. Yeah. But yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it. I thought that it worked well with the first two, like as a nice conclusion to the story of the Lambert family. I think it like ties it up nicely for them. And also kind of because, you know, they're not going to not make any more. Let's not lie to ourselves. Let's not lie to us. Be like, this is the conclusion. Lies you tell. Because, you know, the little boy, Ty Simpkins, who plays Dalton, I think, and his little friend that he finds, Sydney, like,
she was great.
Yeah. Like they have had a great chemistry going on, and that they could have another telling of the story with them. So, you know, I thought like their jump scares were good and they were good about not replicating a lot of the shit from the first two. And so like, I mean, I think Patrick Wilson did a great job as directing. This was his directorial debut.
Good for
him. So, you know, hats off, friend.
Didn't he go to CMU?
Yes.
We should extra root for him for that reason.
Exactly.
The MRI sequence is tremendous.
My God.
Terrifying.
Oh my God.
I don't need to be any more scared of getting an MRI.
Yeah.
I also watched Wham! Netflix, which, kids, I know there's probably a lot of y'all who have no idea who Wham, wit, or why.
wake me up before you go go.
But so like, I mean, but if it's a it's a well done documentary about them, and they do it in such a way where, you know, they mix an interview that they had with George Michael from years ago with a current interview with Andrew. And we never see Andrew today.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So it's just voiceover, the interview with them. And they do it in such a way like it's they're talking to each other. They're separate interviews, but it's like they're talking to each other. And it's just, I mean, it's a really great story. If you were around that time of Wham and you know what they are. And it surprised me that they were only a band for 4 years. Like, they were only a thing for 4 years.
Four wild roller coastery years.
Yeah. And it was like a, you know, like high school. So.
I watched the American Gladiators documentary series on Netflix.
I
never watched American Gladiators. But Colin did, and he wanted to watch it. Really enjoyable, regardless of having no context. But do you know who the bad guy is? Tony Goldwyn's dad.
Oh, shit. Oh, that's Tony Goldwyn's dad. Wow. Yes.
Huh. Okay.
It is a good series.
And finally, I finally finished watching Renfield, which I liked.
I liked it too.
I thought it was really fun. And I think it's just fucking, yeah, Nick Cage is Dracula? Absolutely.
Right.
That's kind of all you need.
Right. And, you know, Nick Cage has like 7 more movies that'll be released this Friday. So, you know, he's constantly working.
And apparently Bangkok Dangerous was a number one movie in America. So.
Oh, yeah.
Glorious.
So, Sean, you said you're doing Barbie second in Barbenheimer?
No, I have to do it first. You got to have a lot of free time to make that choice because Barbie, good news for humanity, Barbie is expected to do much better. So Barbie is on way more screens. So Barbie's playing every half an hour. Oppenheimer is so damn long, and they're not giving it as many screens. So at a lot of theaters, there's like one or two showings of Oppenheimer in the big format. So I had to wrap Barbie. So I'm seeing Barbie at 3 and Oppenheimer at 6:45.
Okay.
Are you also?
I'm seeing Oppenheimer sometime later. Yeah.
Okay. you're not completing the Barbenheimer.
I am more likely to see Barbie twice in this weekend than to see Oppenheimer once.
I wouldn't be doing it if, you know, it weren't part of my job.
Contractually obligated.
But I'm excited. I think I'm down on, this is the opposite of you can't handle the truth. This is us saying what we think we'll think about movies we haven't seen yet.
I think that's relevant. We do that sometimes. I'm just so excited about Barbie.
Oppenheimer, like, I would be, you know, I'm very skeptical because Tenet sucks. And I'm like, you know, so the question is, did he lose it or was that an aberration? On paper, Oppenheimer should be good.
I'm sure it'll be fine. I thought it was wild in the commercials. They're like, first of all, I feel slightly bullied by their advertising where it's like, see it on the biggest screen possible or else. Yeah. You know?
Like, girls, what? No one's going to come to my house?
Yes. Like- or else you will be blown up. You. But it's weird to me in the ad. It's like the director of the Dark Knight trilogy, Tenet, and Interstellar. I'm like, why aren't you saying Inception and Dunkirk, the movies everyone likes, as opposed to the movies that lots of people hate it?
Or like, Tenet? Oh, right? Interstellar?
Because I guess it just goes, I bet Christopher Nolan is like, well, those are my best movies. And I'm like, you're a schmuck, dinosaurs are real, chairs are good.
Barbie has a lot of hype to live up to.
Yeah.
But I feel like it might.
I think it's gonna.
My biggest hesitation is that Noah Baumbach has a writing credit.
Yeah, he's losing it lately. But you know who isn't is Greta Gerwig. Yes. Greta Gerwig is on a big time hot streak.
She was also in White Noise.
She was in White Noise.
But her hair was the best thing about it.
What's the line?
Your hair is a monument. Or your wife's hair is a monument.
Yeah. We already talked about Insidious and Mission Impossible. Joyride is so good.
Where's Joyride?
The road trip movie with Stephanie Sue and others.
Oh, sure. Yay.
It looks great.
So funny. Legit. You'll laugh. You'll cry. Like, it's funny and it has a heart. It's man. I hope more people see this. I don't even care. I know I'm on one about everyone needs to stop sitting in their houses and watching streaming because streaming is part of the problem. Go to the goddamn movie theater. And I hope people do so this makes more money, but I don't care how people see Joyride. If you want to wait, fine. Just see it. It's so good and so funny. I feel like no one but me noticed that another Bird Box came out. Like,
I saw that. I didn't watch it.
Like I reviewed it and everything, and I feel like I had to tell everyone I spoke to that there was another Bird Box Barcelona had appeared.
Is it in Espanol or is it just
mostly in Spanish?
Okay.
So that has something to do with the lack of response to it, but it's fine. It's another.
Did people like the first one?
I was just with the first one. It's like, okay.
A lot of people did, and it was, this isn't true, but it had the air of being the first time everyone was watching the same Netflix original. Mm. There are many others, but like, it had a little bit of that. Wait, did you watch this original movie on it? Like, people who hadn't tried before because Sandra Bullock was in it and it was a little buzzy.
Was it during lockdown?
No, it was like 2018.
Oh, okay. That long ago?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Wow.
So, if you like that one, this franchise gets compared to A Quiet Place because it pretty much is the same thing, with a slight variation. And like A Quiet Place 2, they did the things again. If you liked the things, go see more of those things. I don't know what else. I saw Charade with Audrey Hepburn. It's very nice.
I remember liking that.
It's a very nice time. Let's draw a movie.
Back on this bullshit. This whole premise of our podcast.
Yeah. So, we're just drawing a movie. The reason we're all here. That's made it sound so much more dramatic than I meant it.
Put on this earth.
We were here to watch temporary successful movies in a random order. Well, we've mentioned it already, and if you thought the Tom Cruise discourse was over, you were wrong, because somebody has to interview this vampire.
Yay! Oh, good one. Yay. I'm so glad it's this.
Oh, yeah.
So when you said Tom Cruise, I got nervous for a second. Right, I was like, oh, we're going to have to watch fucking Cocktail.
I've never seen Thunder.
I know you put it up for a movie draft. I was like, you're wrong, Sean.
Okay.
Save yourself.
It's just New Orleans vampires.
Love it.
A lot of fringe, a lot of frills.
So many sexy dudes in this movie.
The hair.
This was like Thirst Trap.
Yes.
Billowing. It's like Michael Bolton became eight people and those people were bitten by vampires. I've seen it once. I've seen it once maybe 7-8 years ago. So
this was a thing I used to watch when it was on cable.
I've seen it once every year since it's been.
But I don't think I've seen it all the way through in 20 years, so it'll be fun to rewatch it.
Yeah.
Has anyone ever read one of the books?
No. I did.
I don't read books.
Is it good?
The first one was good. Mm-hmm. The second one was also good. Queen of the Damned was good. And The Vampire Lestat, I think, is where she lost me.
Okay.
It's like, all right, 25 pages to describe his blouse. Come on. Let's calm down, Anne.
She does well for herself because depending on what tour you take in New Orleans, they'll be like, okay, this house is owned by Anne Rice.
Isn't she dead?
And this one is owned by this musician. Next door is another house owned by Anne Rice. And if you go down the street, Anne Rice owns that too. So
Anne Rice's knickknacks.
Yeah.
Or the estate of Anne Rice, right? Isn't she dead?
I think she's alive.
I thought she died a couple years ago.
Oh. She died in 2021. Well, this is our Anne Rice Memorial episode. It took us 2 years. Great. Interview with the Vampire. That's next time.
I'm excited.
What was the number one song in America when Tropic Thunder graced the summer of 2008? August 13th, 2008.
That's 2 months before I met Dan.
That's 2 weeks before I met Colin. wait, did you say August 18th?
13th.
13th, okay. Pink. It's 10 days before I met Colin. That's so cute.
Pink is incorrect, but Rihanna. Not far off. We're still on the right radio station.
Pussycat Dolls.
Nelly Furtado. Ooh.
Keep that energy.
Christina Aguilera.
This is one of those things
Kelly
where
Clarkson.
You don't think
Katy Perry.
There you go.
Okay.
Hot and Cold?
No.
Kissed a Girl?
Yes.
There we go. So early on in the Katy Perry era. Yeah,
I was about to say that this is before you think that song hit.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
That does not seem like a 15-year-old song.
2008 being 15 years ago is hard for me.
It's really harsh, but yeah.
That's like 5 years ago, I was whichever one it is, Mo Money, Mo Problems, or one of them, when Diddy says 10 years from now, we'll still be on top. And I quickly went to write, looks like you were wrong. And then I was like, Shit, this is 20 years ago. This is... in case you were curious, Low by Flo Rida was the number one song in America for the first 10 weeks of this year. So that was a recent hit.
Also recently was me learning that Flo Rida means Florida.
I just had to stare at it for a while.
That was like 5 years ago.
Oh! You take the space away and it's where he's from. Al Pacino, more clever than that.
Al Pacino is really clever. Number one.